Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Who Inspire. My guest today is my friend Crystal Backman, and she's here to talk about the coronavirus and the prison system. I met Crystal on a cruise I took right after I retired from work, and we've been in communication ever since. So, Crystal, you know, when we met and when we were on the ship, you were telling me what you do. So tell everybody what you do in light of the coronavirus.
As it pertains to the prison system or just in general?
Both.
Okay. Well, both?
Yes.
Well, let's see. I'll give a little bit of my background first. My education is in psychology and sociology and human services. The human services into adult education. And then a student asked me if I would be willing to come and teach in the prison system. And I jumped on a chance. I wasn't afraid at all. Because I have a brother who did 3 years, like 20 years ago, and he's in his 20s, or even 30 years ago. And he's doing fabulous now, but that was my introduction to the prison system and a destruction of all the myths and fears that we would normally have. And so I started that in 2006, and I've been in there ever since, teaching education as well as life skills, which are most important. And I've been in touch with inmates, teaching them, training them inside and out, like I said, since 2006. So it's been quite a journey. So now as it pertains to the coronavirus,
yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, you know, since the coronavirus, what has life been like for you and the people you come in contact with?
Believe it or not, you see a little bit of everything because everyone responds to a crisis differently. Right in my neighborhood, at first, it was pretty panicky. And, of course, everything flew off the shelves. And it's still a problem with getting supplies, just basic supplies. And now we're experiencing curfews and lockdowns. And our biggest problem here in Atlanta, according to our mayor, is that young people, especially in particular, are not heeding to the seriousness of locking down and staying away and doing the social distancing. So she has put in place an even more serious mandate to lock down. I personally am at peace. And that may sound strange to people, but I've been in, believe it or not, emotionally, physically, in worse situations that no one else was going through. So this, to me, is just something that God has to handle, and our job is to pray and to remain calm and cooperate. That's what it's been like for me. And I get to spend more time with my family. I just had a birthday, and we just hunkered in, and we had fun. We had food, and we sat, and we talked and laughed, and it was a great time. So there's some good things coming out of this, as well as the many, many challenges that we see.
So you work in the prison system, and the overriding concern right now is the coronavirus. And when you think of the prison system, you think of overcrowding. So what's it like if you're incarcerated right now?
The worst thing about this for me personally is that I can't get in. I was sent an email from our chaplain, and we are not allowed as volunteers to go in and continue to teach the inmates, which is very disheartening for me. And I'm sending out prayers. I'm sending out videos to the families of the incarcerated, trying to encourage them. If you want to see some of those videos, it's on my Instagram is prison_reform us, prison_reform us, reformus. And that's how I reach out. I have to stay in contact and send them some positive and instruction. Behind bars right now, of course, there are fears that they deal with every day, with the overcrowding and being so close to each other. But they have their own set of survival skills, which they live off of, that we're just now starting to do. They know about the safety and protecting each other from any kind of illness. But, of course, the biggest issue they have is how's their family on the outside, because they can't contact them like they should. There's no visitation. They can't see their children, their wives, husbands. That is the hardest part, not having that human contact.
So how are you dealing with that situation? What do you tell people?
Well, believe it or not, and I'm not the only one saying it, the best thing to do is to cooperate. There's always an underlying bit of anxiety. You're going to feel, as a human being, it's normal to have a little panic moment or just to, you know, some people, you know, before this, that are now no longer shameful. So people suffering from, you know, there's depression, the anxiety, the panics, you know, and all those things trigger our blood pressure and cholesterol and those type of things. So the best thing I try to do, me personally, I pray. I pray and I follow what the scripture says about not being fearful and not being anxious and believing and hoping, and I speak those things. I don't watch the news all day long because it does affect you. It internalizes and affects your body just like good news does. And so I'm very careful with that, and that's been very, very helpful for me personally.
So you're in what state?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
You're in Georgia.
States.
And
yes.
The problem of the coronavirus and overcrowding in prisons is a problem that's faced all over the country, right?
Of course.
Okay.
It was a problem before this.
So since coronavirus has exacerbated the situation, do you foresee a situation as bad as Attica in New York in 1971?
I hope not, but anything is possible. If our government and our local prisons and penitentiaries are not doing everything that they can do, if they leave those inmates and those inmates can see you're not doing what you're supposed to do because they do have access to the news. If those funds and things are not trickling down to the prison system to keep them safe and they see that they're being abused and neglected, they will act out and they're very creative and they will do what they need to do to survive. A survival instinct kicks in, and I wouldn't put anything past a desperate person, whether they're locked up or not. So as long as the prisons are doing what the government is instructing them to do, and the inmates know that, and, you know, they're not being abusive to inmates due to this, I think they'll be fine. You know, you only see problems in prisons on the news when there's severe neglect. Health crisis behind bars has been very prevalent in the news before this virus even hit. So I can't imagine what's going on now. And so, you know, we have the issues of cell phones in prisons, which they're not supposed to have, but let's face it, they're in there. And if it wasn't for them being in there, we would never know what some of our loved ones are going through. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. And I'm just hoping that our federal, state, and local government keeps inmates informed. The more they know, the more they can calm down and plan for themselves and help their families. If they don't know and they just hearing terrible things, they're not getting answers, you're going to have a problem.
So nationwide, prisoners cannot see their friends or family. Am I correct?
That's what I'm seeing. Absolutely. And then, you know, when the listen, when we can't go in as volunteers, when free labor can't get in, no one can get in, and it is for protection. It is, and I understand it, and I know inmates understand it. I know they would never want to contaminate their loved ones, and we don't want to contaminate them. And all that is possible with visitation. It is. And you can't start it and stop it or pick certain inmates, certain groups, and say you can have visitation and you can't. That will start a real, real serious problem. So if you can't do it for all, you don't do it for anyone. What I strongly suggest, as I said in one of my videos on the Instagram, is make sure you communicate. If you can get on the phone, get them on the phone, speak positively, encourage them, and if they have children, you yourself, send cards. Send a lot more cards than you would normally send. Send letters of good news, well wishes, speak life, speak good health, and tell them to be encouraged and to be inspired and to use what they have that's around them that can help them to resolve. They can have different group sessions and study sessions to help them, encourage them while they're incarcerated. But from the outside, as a family member, the best thing you can do is keep that contact coming. Load up that mail room and keep mail going. Keep it going. Keep the communication going so they can have some sense of comfort.
So basically right now, have you heard of cases of the coronavirus in any facility amongst the inmates?
Yes. I can't state the name of the prison particularly, but it is in the news.
Okay.
And it was carried in by an employee, an officer that works in the prison system. That's how it gets in.
Right.
So I don't know that if it's widespread. I can't say that. They're not releasing that information. But, of course, when they find out about cases, they do quarantine and they do the same procedure and stuff that they're doing out here because they know if that virus gets in behind any prison, it's pretty much a done deal. It's pretty much a done deal because if they're not getting the proper supplies and PPEs and medications and stuff to us right out here, listen, they don't think the prison system is a priority. We've seen that. And I would hate to think that the guys or the men in prison are going to be last on the list when it comes to getting health care for this virus. But what they don't tell you, you kind of have to guess, and that's frustrating. So we just kind of hope for the best, and I hope that family members and inmates are taking every precaution they can, getting sanitizer, making homemade sanitizer, cleaning, washing hands, the things that are simple that you can do to protect yourself.
How bad is the situation where you live?
In the county?
In New York, it's like horrendous. How in New York City, I mean. How is it down where you live?
Well, first let me say, being a native New Yorker, born and raised there, my heart breaks for what New Yorkers are going through. I have family members there that up in age and they are confined to the home. It's very disconcerting for me, and it really hurts my heart to know that they're up there. But I know you New Yorkers, hey, we're strong people and we get things done and we take care of business and we'll do whatever we can. So I'm sending love to my fam in New York. As far as Georgia is doing everything they can, but they're very hush-hush, I'll be honest with you. From our governor, he seems to drop in at the last minute with what we need to do, but thank goodness for our mayor and our local community government. They are on task with things. They are enforcing that curfew. They're making sure that people who can donate masks and donate time, health workers, they're doing everything they can. Everybody is doing the 100, doing the most right now. But I just wish that our governor, our Georgia governor, as well as all other governors, would take their feet off the brake and hit the gas because this is serious. And I think that most of them are operating out of fear. they're worried about the money aspect instead of saying, okay, just open the floodgates, let's take all the help that we're being offered and get everybody safe, and we'll worry about the budget later. But, you know, unfortunately, the thought is the opposite direction. It's fear first, and what if, and what if, and people are dying. So we have to call, contact, and encourage our governors to get a move on and quit making excuses.
Now, in New York State, Governor Andrew Cuomo has press conferences every day, and every day he talks about ventilators.
Yes.
Are the hospitals in a prison setting, are they adequate to help all the people that would need it?
Did you say hospitals in prison seven? I don't know what that is.
I'm sorry. The hospitals and prisons, are they equipped to handle all of the cases that might come down the pike?
They're not saying.
Oh,
they are
wow.
not saying. What you get is a political answer. You get we're doing the best we can to move resources the best we can based on what we have. And then you hear the excuses. It's always somebody else's fault. So they're not saying, and when they're not saying, it's because they don't have a sufficient answer that we would accept.
So
if
people on the outside of a prison system, if they don't have adequate care, like the ventilators and the masks, if that's the case, then I'm sure it's that much worse in the prison system. Would you agree?
I absolutely agree. All you have to do, don't take my word for it or even my opinion, all you have to do is go on the website of any prison and look at their budgeting for the current year, previous years, and see how they allocate funds and see how much is allocated toward nutrition, education, medical care, as opposed to all the other things where the big money goes. I mean, the numbers are on every website, and you can see. And you divide that money by how many inmates are incarcerated in that particular facility, and you can do the math and see how much they're spending per inmate. But they are charged for everything, every aspirin, every visit. The inmate is charged. Very frustrated.
So if there's not adequate protection for them in the hospitals, I mean, in the prisons, I'm sorry, then the anxiety must be tremendous in prisons throughout the country, do you think?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there are human beings back there. They're no different than us. And can you imagine those that are innocent that are in there? And there are a lot of innocent people in prison. Can you imagine the ones that are nonviolent? Now, there many have been released, I will say that. And that's a good thing, but it also presents a ton of other problems. But for those that are in there, knowing the situation, knowing how supplies and things have been dispersed in the past when there was no pandemic issue outside, but there are crises and issues on the inside. And but I will say this about most inmates, they have a team mentality. And whatever they have, they pool their resources and they help each other out because they want to survive. They want to survive. And they lean on, you got to keep in mind, in prisons, there are a lot of faith-based individuals and groups. All religious practices are allowed. You name it, they have a right to practice their religion. And that's a good thing because that helps them to control the emotions, the calmness, it levels down that anxiety. And so many of the incarcerated are more spirit-led than fear-led. And so they know to gather and to pray or meditate or shut down and just write and read because they go through crisis all the time. This is new to us. It's not new to them. I would dare to say they have better coping skills than we do.
So basically, we have orders in this country to isolate yourself. In the prison system, would you say that most of the inmates are isolated and don't have much contact with other people?
Now, no, they don't have any contact. Definitely not with outside during this virus. But on the inside, I would say things are pretty normal as to their cell. They may have limited movement. And when I say that, inmates move on the hour at certain times, and certain areas are allowed to move and go and take care of things. And then they have to go back to their cell, get locked down, and then another group can move. And so it's controlled movement. And for this virus, that controlled movement is still very helpful. And it helps contain those who may be infected that we don't even know are infected yet, keeping that movement controlled so they can monitor what's going on. But they are isolated. They've always been isolated.
So this hit the United States the first week in March. When did you realize this was happening, and when were you denied access to go inside the prison?
Oh, let's see. I'd have to go back to my email and check that. Let's see. But I did get an email saying that because of this, they were going to shut down. Let me see if I can find it really quick. I know it was at least a month ago.
Okay.
But I can be definite. Even if you give me 1 minute, Kay.
Okay.
Let's see. Let's see. And it was disheartening. My heart kind of dropped when I got it because, you know, we have an awesome program that we just started. We just graduated our first class just before the holiday. And we were all geared up to start our new class. The program is called Threshold. And it's a life skill preparation course for those who don't have much time. And they need that preparation, as you know.
Right.
And it's unfortunate that it had to be temporarily shut down. Let's see. I'm sorry, I don't want to keep you holding. It was sometime in March. It was March, early March.
Okay.
Yeah, of 2020.
So when do you think that, of course, nobody knows this, and you don't you don't anticipate going back into the prison anytime soon, right?
Well, until this lifts for everybody, because we were having a hard time getting into the prisons when there was nothing going on. And that's because so much goes on the inside. And if the conditions aren't right and perfectly safe, we will not be allowed back in. So I'm assuming that even when all this is over for us, they've still got to turn around and do another clean sweep of every prison to make sure that we've got things covered, that we don't have anybody hidden that's still battling with this virus. They've got safety is the number one priority in the prison system, especially for allowing civilians to come in. So it will take a little longer, just as it will. We'll all be readjusting in every facet of life, from schools to your job place. I don't think anything will ever be the same again. And so they've got to make sure and ensure that things are safe for everybody in the prisons before we go back in.
So for the guards, are they taking precautions to make sure that nobody's coming to work sick? Because one person can infect many others.
Absolutely. What precautions they're taking, I don't know. I know what I would suggest, but I don't know what they're doing. And the prison system is not one to get up and announce every move that they make. They can't do that. It would be unsafe to do that. And so we just have to watch and see what they're saying on the news. What's on the news is what they were willing to share. Other than that, you will not know.
Okay.
And there's reasons for that.
So you haven't been inside since this whole thing, you know, broke out. So you have no idea how much anxiety and fear the inmates feel, do you?
Well, I have an idea, because like I said, they go through far more crises than we do on the outside. Sometimes they are locked down for a significant number of time for things that we don't know anything about. Those lockdowns are ordered by the wardens, and it's a lockdown until the warden says to lift it. And so anytime there's a lockdown, it gets really, really rough back there, because you're confined and you don't have outside contact. So it's, like I said, this isn't really new for them. It's just really frustrating, I'm sure, because of the fact that they're hearing and seeing bits and pieces of the news that keep changing. And so the uncertainty, of course, would bring a human reaction. Well, what's really going on? When are we really going to find out the truth? You know, but at the same time, they have to remain calm, period. They have to, for their sake, because you, as we know, the more worried and anxious and frustrated and angry you become, your body will attack itself. You will attack your own immune system and make yourself sick just by what's going on in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to watch their thoughts and watch what they're saying just to stay healthy themselves.
Right. So in the couple minutes we have left, Crystal, give a little plug to yourself, what you do and what you teach.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, I first began teaching GED courses, adult education courses, to inmates through the adult education system. But I started composing curriculum for life skills, because the inmates were coming to class, when they felt like it, and then they'd go back to their cells, and there would be very bad behavior, and they were skipping class because they were in isolation. So they were living two lives. They would behave in school, but then they would get out back into population and misbehave. So my class became mandatory for life skills. And so that has been my primary focus since 2006. It's a 12-week course, and I wrote it over years of just sitting with inmates side by side, listening, watching, paying attention, and seeing the growth. And when we got their behavior under control and their thinking under control, their test scores went up. And I still have the awards, which I love, for having the highest rate of GED certificates given to the prisons we were teaching in. It just needs a small tweaking. So that is my life's work with the inmates, to get them educated and reformed like it's supposed to be, and then sending them home. That's my goal, that we need those men to come home and take a hold of their families and their communities and bring back order. And I have many students that have left the prison system, and they're doing very well. Their families are intact, their marriages are intact, and I'm very proud of them. So I'm going to continue in that work as long as there is, you know, prisons that need it. The education is very low. So that's my goal. That's my purpose. And like I said, my background, my master's is in human services, which is very broad. And so this is, I believe, my calling. It's a calling for me, because there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about the incarcerated and how to make things better. And the system works that I've been using so far. It works. And I thank God for that assignment.
Thank you, Crystal. You've been listening to Crystal Backman, and this is Women Who Inspire. If you like this show, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at WomenInspire21. Thank you, Crystal. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Cynthia.